My apologies for my extended absence. I've been traveling the world and putting together my television show, which starts shooting this month. It's all very exciting. Breaking the dry spell will be the one and only Zev Eisenberg. He has been a friend of mine for years and years and years. An amazing DJ, an incredible entrepreneur, a man who started a movement in my beautiful city of Brooklyn. So I leave you with not one, but two different episodes starring the one and only Wolf Zev Eisenberg. This is Zev. I've known Zev for how many years?
Seven, 8 years, yeah.
We are the worst kind of people, curmudgeon-y Jews, who have defected from our religion and tried to start business. I want to thank you for having us in your space.
You're very welcome.
We're here to talk about health, about a moment in time that changes your reality forever,
sure.
And how you rebound from life-changing news.
So, I had a very interesting, exciting life. In my 20s, I met my partner from this Wolf and Lamb whole record label and music career.
Yep.
I met him when I was about 20 years old. I went to school with his nephew.
And what school was that?
Hasidic school.
That's right.
Oh, that's what you were getting.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
I grew up Hasidic.
I think it's important that everyone know that Zev is a dirty, rotten Hasid.
Okay.
Like, with payach and tallit, little fringes coming out his asshole, the whole thing.
8 siblings. We grew up in Flatbush, went to school
like
in
the people
in
that
Crown
you
Heights.
See on the M train with the Century 21 bags, orthopedic socks and shoes, that's his family.
Right.
But I want everyone to know that the Brooklyn music scene that was started by Wolf and Lamb was really started by Hasidic Jews.
And it's still populated by Hasidic Jews. I grew up here in Brooklyn in the Lubavitch sect, which is from Crown Heights. They're a little bit more modern, but equally nuts as the ones here in Williamsburg.
I mean, they still shave their heads and fuck through sheets, right?
They don't shave their heads, but they wear wigs. That's just as stupid. And they don't fuck through sheets, but
like
none
Fiddler
of them
on
do.
The roof.
They look like Fiddler on the roof. They talk like Fiddler on the roof.
Handsome.
They listen to the
he's
same
tall.
Depressing music
he's
as Fiddler.
Too, but yeah, got it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, I grew up in that world. I managed to get out when I was like 15.
And when you say get out, what does that mean? Did you
get
run
out
from the rabbi?
Yeah, I left my school and I left my family and I went out into the world to
like
try
Feifel
to figure
goes,
out.
Goes east.
Like exactly, yeah. Try to go out into the world and figure out, how to make something of myself. So, which I didn't succeed on yet.
You did,
so
you
I'm
did.
Still working on it.
You've got a hot young girlfriend. We're in your space, a cool Brooklyn dope underground warehouse party place. I mean, you did it.
Yeah, well,
you getting your dick sucked
regularly? Work in,
are you traveling the world?
Work in progress.
Are you eating expensive organic food?
Yes, yes.
Good, we're
yes,
good.
Yes, and yes.
All right, okay. So you made it. You did it. I mean, your brothers and sisters live in a Hasidic box, yes?
Yeah.
So you made
except
it.
Except the ones I got out.
That's
now
right.
Now I've got my family half and half.
That's right.
So I came back to New York after a brief stint in L.A. That was about 2000. I met Gotti. We were both at a really good point in our life. We're both into music. We started to, we started to do these parties in New York. The first one, nobody came to.
What kind of music were we playing at this lonely party?
We were playing, like this kind of like gay minimal techno. It was from this label Compact, and it was kind of like bleepity bleepity techno, but it had a lot of heart to it. Okay,
so
it wasn't completely
boring.
Cold.
So bored by bleepity bleep.
Anyway, so, but we kept on doing these parties and we kept on, we just kept at it because you need to do that. And after a year, we had a couple of people there and, things started picking up. We got a place here. This is actually a reincarnation of another venue that we had for 10 years, a few blocks away, the Marcy Hotel.
You mean the legendary place
legendary
with squash walls that I used to routinely have to get wiped off the floor?
Yeah, you and many
and
others.
And I am lucky I didn't get an STD from.
You and that, I can't say for
the
people.
No.
That
it was like Tinder before Tinder. It was 3D Tinder. Like it was the Marcy.
Slightly before
take home
Tinder.
Some asymmetrical Drake Berlin DJ looking dude, who had like Lavo smear all over his body, ketamine crusted in his nose.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'd make out in the steam room.
That place.
I was there. I remember.
So we opened the place up. It was a really big hit. Things were taking off, and things were really exciting.
They were.
People were actually listening to what we were playing, and it was really exciting.
Disco edits.
And then we started going to Burning Man. That was exciting, too. This was in 2002. We went for the first year, and everything was just, like, on fire, finally, you know? I met Gotti. It was a couple years later. We had a really amazing group of friends and a family that we
you
put together here.
You could fuck girls who weren't wearing wigs.
I could fuck girls who weren't wearing wigs. It was amazing. I was sitting looking out at the playa, and I just kind of felt myself drawn to my face, and I found a giant lump on the side of my face, and I went to Gotti a few hours later. I'm like, I think I have cancer, and he's like, yeah.
How did you know you had cancer?
You know.
What do you mean you
fucking know? I don't know. You just know. You have a giant lump on the side of your face that doesn't belong there.
That's a Jewish thing.
That's
what
he said.
All Jews think they have cancer immediately, but you're the one who actually had it.
Anyway, I knew I had it. Gotti talked me out of it. I had a biopsy. I had cancer. I had to have a surgery to take out my thyroid and a bunch of lymph nodes. It was very, very disruptive. They severed my entire neck like that because they had to see where it spread to. So they had to like kind of look under it. So anyway, it was really, really disruptive. The recovery was took many, many, many months. I still have a lot of pain and trouble from that first surgery.
How big are we talking? Like golf ball?
Like a golf ball size. By the time it came out, it was like a golf ball. It wasn't here. It was actually spread to...
Did you have someone actively having sex with you during this time, or was it like a non-sex time?
I'm trying to think. No, I like to be alone during my cancer times. It's a lot to go through, and it's actually sometimes even more difficult to go through with another person. That was my experience. I was younger, and I just preferred to be alone. But that was the first time, and what's really interesting was I all my memories from that first time were in the Marcy Hotel. So we had just built the place. We had one or two preview parties that were just like off the wall, and then boom, like Zev has cancer, no more parties, everything's off for like
party over
months. So that was the first time it happened. After, I would say after 6 to 8 months, I was back in the game, you know?
What's the game?
The game was
ketamine,
my life, which was,
pussy and
you know, I took a step back from that. I wasn't like,
how quickly did you do drugs after you got with cancer?
Probably 7, 8 months.
That's a long time for us.
Yeah, it's a serious thing. So finally, after a year, 8 months to a year, things started getting going again. And, you know, we started, and things by then, since we had pulled back for a while, like, there was like parties even more hype and like, okay, yeah. So everything started taking off.
I mean, your parties were insane.
Well, that was all the way in the beginning of them, and we didn't really know what we were doing yet. Maybe that's why it was so much fun back then. And then we started touring. We started having a lot of guests from international DJs come down, and we started getting invited to tour all over the world. And, you know, and I started touring. At that time, I didn't really kind of take the cancer too seriously because I was following what the doctors told me, which was that cancer happens because you have bad genetics and bad luck, which I also do sometimes.
I mean, as Ashkenazi Jews, we are the most inbred. We have the worst genetics of all time, for sure.
Probably, yeah. And the more Hasidic, the worse.
Yeah, so you're like 10 times. Yeah. Our genes are bad.
They're pretty bad. But he told me it was just like, because I asked him, as any normal person would, what can I do different so I don't get it again? He's like, just follow the treatment. You won't get it again.
Which is chemo?
For this is radiation.
Okay.
And the pill is radioactive, and it's radiated iodine, and then iodine gets stuck to your thyroid. So they basically... You basically become radioactive for a month.
Like a superhero.
Pretty much. Very and sad they actually superhero. Send you off. They ask you, oh, you're single? Great. Go somewhere where you're not going to interact with other people. Because when you eat things on the plate, your saliva is radioactive. When you go to the bathroom, the bathroom's radioactive.
Your piss was radioactive?
Everything's radioactive. You're drenched in this, you know. And the funny thing was, when they actually give it to you, they put you in this room, and this guy comes in with a suit on, and like huge
like
rubber
a hazmat suit,
huge rubber
like
gloves,
like Homer in the beginning
yes,
of the.
Yes. And he with funny. Big fat rubber gloves, not like you know like the exam gloves. Like
but you're totally naked, about to.
I'm
take
just
it
yeah,
in
I'm
body.
Just sitting there in like a hospital gown, and they open up this steel door in the wall.
Jesus, with like mist coming out, like in the movies, no like mist. Iron Man.
Pull out this metal thermos and like twist it open.
Oh my God.
Because they get it delivered from like the factory that
from
makes
Spring,
it.
From Springfield. Springfield yeah.
And he takes this huge pair of tongs and like pulls out this pill, puts it in a plastic cup.
God.
He's like, here, take it.
And you say, yes, sir, may I have another?
Yeah, I had fucking cancer. I'm in a hospital. I don't know what the fuck to do. You listen to whatever they tell you, you know? So anyway, and I, you know, so I asked him, is there anything to do? He's like, no, just do your thing. You know, 93.7% chance you'll never get it again. I go back to my career. It's doing really, really well. We're traveling. I never got back into drugs the way I was before I got cancer. You know what I'm saying? I used to do drugs like proper.
Okay.
And then I just pulled back and, you know. So,
because if you were doing drugs more proper than the way we were doing drugs,
I was doing drugs like I was doing drugs. I was doing lines then, and I do bumps
now.
Does that clarify that for everything? Is that clear now? Okay. Yeah, so everything was going really well, and then I got cancer again. This time it was in my neck again, but I didn't even have a thyroid anymore. So I went back to a different doctor this time, and I asked him, you know, I thought you said I wasn't going to come back. You seemed pretty sure about that, you know, when you told me that there was like a 90-something percent chance. You're like, well, you know, it's 90-something, but it's like kind
you're
of...
Going to? He sounds super
old,
chewy, this
old,
guy.
You know, old
yeah,
fucking
well,
fart.
You can. God is a capricious
yeah.
God.
So that's it. My whole fucking career got stopped again for... 6 months. My partner Gotti, I had to have the speech with him, which was like, listen, man, you know, if you need to go do your own thing, I understand. By the second time, I was like, okay, something's wrong with what they're saying, because they seem pretty sure that I wasn't going to get it again, but I did get it again. So that was like, that started like getting me thinking that maybe they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They look like they know what they're talking about, and they sound like they know what they're talking about. But in the reality was that they didn't. I followed everything they said, which was like a very aggressive treatment for you know stage 2 cancer. So I had another surgery, and that was the end of that. I recovered much faster from that one. I turned everything down a little bit more. I became a little bit more boring.
Yeah.
I traveled a little less. And then when I believe I was, because it was 6 years ago. 34. So when I was 28, I got cancer a third time.
Where was it this time?
The third time was stage 2 testicular cancer, which is,
that's
you're
right.
excited about that?
I heard.
At this point, it was ridiculous because thyroid cancer is rare.
Yeah.
Having a second recurrence after you follow the treatment is rare. And now I had testicular cancer,
that's
which
right.
is also considered
you're
rare.
You're special. God hates you and only you.
You know? So that was the third time. And the third time I went back to the hospital again and I asked them now, what's going on? There's gotta be some connection between them, you know? And they just kind of waved it off. And I'll shorten the story because it's really, really, really long. But basically my prognosis this time was a surgery to remove the first tumor, a year of chemo, to shrink the second tumor was in my back. So it was a year of chemo just to shrink it enough to have the second surgery. So it was basically, I was looking at a year of like, and anyone who's been to a hospital or been with someone that had a disease knows that it's a real, nothing's easy with them. You have to go back every week, there's tests, and it's just super stressful.
It's a schlep.
It's a schlep, thank you. So I was looking at this year of very intense, really, really disruptive treatment. My career was, forget about it. Like I told our agent, like, just cancel me from your computer system.
Because
I don't know when this
is
going to end, and you know. And I remember like sitting down, and for those of you who don't know how chemo works, you sit down in this very comfortable chair, and they basically just hook you up to this IV line and start pumping these like very toxic drugs into your arm for about 2 hours a day for 5 days straight, and then you stop for 20 days, and then they assess you again and decide if you're healthy enough or strong enough to go do the next round. That's how it works.
Did you lose all your hair?
I started losing
my
hair.
Did you blame it on Judaism, or did you say it was chemo?
This time I blame it on Judaism. The last time, 6 years ago, I blame it on the chemo. The chemo is really strong, but the first couple of rounds are just to knock out your immune system. So it's like a slow onset. It's not like you take it and you're like, ah, you know, it's progressive, you know, it takes like a few weeks to like. So anyway, I did the first 2-3 days, and the food they give you there is you know, a roast beef sandwich, a can of Coke. This is like, you know, a fucking room full of people with cancer, you know,
yeah.
And like a cookie, you know, and something that just wasn't sitting right with me, you know, at the time. And I did the first 5 days of my year of chemo, and on the way out, they had a big thing of donuts that the nurses brought, like Dunkin' Donuts for all the patients. For Friday, because it was Friday, so they give donuts to everyone. And then on the way back from there, in my car, on the way home, something just hit me. I was like, something must be really wrong with this, you know? So I went home and I started researching, you know, donuts, cancer. And like, there's like 10 million results, like, don't eat donuts if you have cancer. It was like, Google's not wrong. Google knows everything, you know?
Google seems like a safe bet.
And so I called the doctor, and something just like took over, and you know, like the survival instinct. I just like called him up and said, look, let's cancel all my appointments. At that point, I had about 80 appointments set up, because they actually have a whole office full of people who are organizing, you know, because it's really, you know, you have like appointments all the way far out with all these different people. And he's like, what do you, you know, I'm like, just fucking cancel it. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I'm not doing it in your fucking Dunkin' Donuts spot, you know?
You have so much self.
But the third time you have cancer,
I know besides you would cancel their cancer.
I think the third time around you'd cancel it.
Nah.
Yeah. The third time around you'd think, you know what?
No, you've got cojones.
Maybe this is not the fucking...
You had cancer-infected cojones. I had cojones. But to cancel all your treatment So I guess I just want you to sort of walk through the things that you cut out of your diet to make you beat cancer without those asshole doctors.
What I did was, the first thing I did was, I canceled this whole thing. I fought with my family because they were like, you should go back to the hospital. I fought with some of my friends. Some people were supportive. And I had to just kind of, you know, stop and assess the situation. So I went on Amazon and I bought every fucking, like, natural cancer treatment book I could find.
I read them in your cabin.
There was a lot of them. There was a lot of them. And I just started reading. And everything that sounded like it made sense, I just started doing.
Cut out dairy, cut out sugar, cut out
the
meat.
Diet thing took a little bit longer to figure out, because there's a lot of conflicting information out. This researcher figured out that probiotics is a part of beating cancer. So she had all these different foods that she figured out help your body fight cancer.
Right.
So that's what the beginning. The you started a day with that. There was fresh juice. There was coffee enemas. There was
coffee enemas. Did you do them yourself?
200 coffee enemas.
200.
Yeah, like once. You've
done
once 200 a day.
200 coffee enemas.
Yeah, I've done 200.
How often do you do enemas?
Well, during this period of 5 years when I was in the process of healing myself, I did it probably every other day. Sometimes I would do like 5 days in a row, and then
like you hook it up to the ceiling, and then you put the thing in your butt, and then what happens? And then what do?
And then you fill yourself up with coffee, and then you go to the bathroom.
For how long?
For how long? What do you hold it in? Like 10 minutes or so.
Awful.
But anyway, this protocol that I followed was vegan, besides a little bit of dairy in the morning and the afternoon that was blended with some other things to make it more effective. The diet is really powerful. It's not. If you read the specifics of her protocol, what I followed, it's really, really clever. It's really well thought out. It's very ahead of her time.
What is the name of this book?
This researcher, her name is Budwig.
So if people are sick, and it doesn't have to just be cancer, you would recommend
reading this book? Yeah, I would totally recommend it to people, but it's a lot of work.
And one of the funny things I'd spoken to you about before was even though when you were basically dying, you never went back to God.
Never went back to God. Fuck God. I never had any...
I mean, because they say there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole, but except for you.
That's such horseshit.
Except for you.
Yeah, well, I'm not the only one. I think that's just what they tell everyone. You Christian Christians, they're like, oh, yeah, when you're dying, then you'll really regret that you're not Jewish.
But why did you feel like, I mean, after being raised in a very, you know, orthodox, like, religious family, why did you feel like you still thought, you doubled down on not an atheism?
Because I never believed it. It's stupid. I never believed in God. God and Judaism specifically is stupid.
Well, let's make it about God. Why is God stupid?
God is stupid because every attribute that humanity has bestowed on God is just humanity.
If you had just a couple summations of, like, for people and their health, about what they're putting in their bodies, you know, because not everyone has cancer or whatever, but there's so much manure and hooey out there. Do you have any tips and things for people about what to put in their bodies and how to follow just a healthier way of eating?
You know, I think it's a very personal thing, and I think that we're human beings. If there's anything I learned after this whole thing, is that we're truly omnivores. Some people thrive, like Gotti, my partner, solely eats meat. He's 40, you know, and he's alive and
he's
kicking.
He's not 40.
He's 40.
Fuck you, he's
and
not 40.
And he looks younger than me. Everyone
Fuck you,
thinks
he's
that.
Not 40.
I'm 34 and he looks younger
he's
than
40?
Me.
He's 40?
And he only eats jerky.
He looks
and
like,
meat.
I mean...
So what does that
like
tell
Michael
you?
Michael Jackson
he's
would
molest
fine. Him. He's like...
Yes,
he's
older than me. So that's my my point is I don't really know that there's any one good thing that you have to put in your body. I think everyone's different. The thing is to just, I think it's great for
you.
Yeah,
semen's good. I've heard men have told me many times it's full of protein.
Really
it helps
right.
me be skinny. Exactly. And it's good for my skin,
right.
it turns out. And my eyesight, it helps with eyesight.
It helps with everything, huh? And to make a long story short, I got better.
Like actually better.
I got better.
No
like,
more chemo, no
I had
more
this,
radiation.
I had a 2.5 centimeter tumor in my back, and it's gone. It was gone after 3 years. It took a long time and a lot of like patience, but yeah, it's gone.
How much?
So I'm 6 years now.
6 years.
Six
cancer
years
free,
cancer free.
And it is solely due to diet, really, and lifestyle change.
Diet and lifestyle changes, and I mean, everyone's body is different, and I think I could thrive on meat. I could thrive on all these different things, but for that particular time of healing, which was the 5 years after I last got sick.
And weren't you ever scared, like, maybe this is not the right choice? Maybe I should have radiation. Maybe I should have, like, listened to the doctors and not just eat, like, veganaise, you know?
I questioned my decision the first few weeks after I started it. And
you're still alive.
And I got, and I was very, very, I was having trouble sleeping because I was so worried that I had made the wrong choice and I was going to end up dead. And then I took a meditation course with Phoenix here in the city for, like, 7 days. And by the end of the 7 days, I never questioned it again.
I love you.
That was the end of it.
I've loved you for so long.
Thank you, Zoe.
I'm so grateful for you. Love you. Love you. Love you. Love you. I'm so glad you're not dead.
So
I'm so glad
am
he's
I.
not dead.
Thank
anyway.
You, everyone.
To Zev for opening up his heart and mind to me over the last decade during our friendship. You can follow all of his antics at www.wolfandlandmusic.com. I would highly recommend going to see him or any of the Crew Love Gang and Soul Clap. They are the most fun to dance to and just the best night out you can imagine. I have been doing live Periscopes for a while now. You can catch that on my Twitter feed at @GenuinelyFalse. And yes, I did it. I succumbed to Snapchat. My handle is @DJKillinIt. I'm not really sure quite yet how to use it, but I do use it sometimes. You can always contribute to my Patreon campaign if you feel like my show brings value to your world. Sending you so much love from beautiful Brooklyn. And if it wasn't for the music, I